Now, if you love a clever turn of phrase, then I recommend very highly that you do not touch your radio and you do not leave the room for the next 5 minutes or so, because if you do, you're going to be as unhappy as a bastard on Father's Day. Helen Rydstrand and Olivia Roseman are The Expressionist, with a regular podcast dedicated to dishing the dirt on the phrases that pepper our speech. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Nick.
You weren't ready for that one, were you?
No, I mean, I just feel like we've moved beyond the times where that idiom is even acceptable.
When I was a kid, that confused the hell out of me, because I was unfamiliar with the traditional usage of the word bastard, and I only knew it as the insulting thing. So I thought it was just because your father was a really nasty person, so therefore wouldn't get presents on Father's Day.
Oh, that's cute. That's cute. That's a much nicer way to interpret it, isn't it?
Now, we are talking insults.
We are. We are. You flaming galah.
If you didn't hear beforehand, please, we are talking insulting idiom. Just be a little ready for... Are we calling it salty language? We'll call it salty language.
Salty, saucy, or not saucy. Anyway, yes.
Flaming
insults.
Galah.
Your flaming galah. Yeah, an interesting one. Turns out, I sort of was very familiar with this saying, flaming galah.
Yeah.
I thought I was. Well, I was, but I was quite surprised as to the origin. So it turns out that just calling someone a galah as being a idiot or a silly or a sort of noisy, bumbling person has quite a long history. It goes back to the earlier days of the colony, the early 20th century or late 19th century even. Yeah, so the first usage was in 1938, in fact, and one other early usage in 1945 was in the book We Were Rats, which is written by Lawson Glossop, who himself was one of these rats of Tobruk. So that's when the Allied forces were holed up in North Africa under siege by the Germans for like 10 months during World War II. So they were called rats, because I assume they probably just had to kind of live semi-underground and in squalid conditions. That's my assumption. And according to the Oxford Companion of Australian Literature, most types of cockatoo. So, in fact, the galah is a kind of cockatoo, which I didn't know. And for those who aren't familiar with the bird, it's that pink-breasted, grey-backed bird that you often see. You often see them. I feel like you do often see them on the grass, hanging out in.
Oh yeah, they're seed eaters. They're ground feeders.
Well, that could be one explanation. But let me get to that in a minute. So, yeah, apparently...
Sure.
I mean...
Could be one explanation.
It could be... Okay, let me just temper that. That is the correct explanation. But in researching this idiom, I came across this wonderful online resource called Uncyclopedia. And so it looks just like Wikipedia, but instead of the... free encyclopedia, which is Wikipedia's tagline. It's the content-free encyclopedia. Pretty funny. But it's amazing. It looks just like it. And it has a whole entry on galahs, including a substantial bit about this idiom, and all these delightfully ridiculous descriptions of the bird. So according to the encyclopedia, the reason why you see them on the grass, especially in the afternoon, evening, is that they have a tendency to overeat at breakfast, morning tea, elevenses, and a light pasta snack just to keep the hunger at bay before lunch. As a result, they spend much of the afternoon apparently sheltering from the heat in the foliage of trees and shrubs, though some experts contend they are just too stuffed to move. Which I thought was really nice. So anyway, it goes, obviously there's a long history of calling people galahs, but the addition of flamen, as far as I can tell,
Don't tell me.
Do you know?
No,
you know
I'm hoping I'm wrong.
I mean, do you want to guess?
Everyone knows.
Apparently everyone knows. Now, the reason I think I didn't know is I was a neighbor's girl myself. Yes.
It really is just from that?
It's just from Alf. Yep. So apparently, I mean, as I said, I watch Neighbours. I didn't watch Home and Away. So apparently he said flaming lots of things. You're flaming idiot and flaming this and that. And that was a sort of something that the writers were really, that was his, like, one
really
of his
really passionate
take.
About, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go, a relatively recent coinage there. But I think it's actually quite nice, because I think it just can enter, like, the annals of insult idioms alongside other great ones coined in TV and movies, such as You Warthog-Faced Buffoon, or Your Mother Was a Hamster and Your Father Smells of Elderberries.
Some classics.
Yeah. Two of my favourites there. I fart in your general direction, Nick. Anyway, over to you. Not really. Not really.
A big Monty Python fan. I love it. What have you got for us, Helen?
I mean, I wanted to sort of begin by noticing how creative insults are. They really are a great kind of instance of how linguistic creativity is actually totally universal. Everyone's actually really into it. They might just only use it in order to insult other people. So I'm thinking, I started out looking at all of the variations of things like, you've got a face like a dropped pie, nice one.
All of those are great.
Smashed crab, cat's ass, a bag of greasy spanners, a robber's dog, a hat full of assholes, all of these ones.
Head like a half-sucked mango seed.
I'd never heard that one before. Yeah, I came across that one as well. And there's heaps and heaps of like types of insults that have like multiple variations like this. But I also came across an amazing new discovery, which I want to share with everyone. Apparently you can call someone a cabbage head as well.
Right.
So that's been a derogatory term for a dull-witted or foolish person since the 17th century. The Oxford English Dictionary's first example is from a play by Aphra Behn, who was one of the first professional female writers, also a spy. She was amazing. But there is a phrase using that term, which apparently is still a thing in Yorkshire, where all the great phrases
all
live.
All the great phrases.
You can say, I'm not as green as I am cabbage looking, meaning I'm not as naive as I look, basically. So I look obviously, or I look dumb,
yeah.
But I'm not. I'm not as green as I am cabbage looking.
Maybe with a Yorkshire accent, it rolls off the tongue a little better?
Yeah, I think so. The grammar of it is weird for us, I think. And their earliest example for that, 1898, is from a newspaper. And it's a great example because it's also a case of a labour dispute between a guy who worked at a greengrocer about lost wages. And so he obviously it was a great wit, this guy. He rolled in that phrase into that. I'm not going to try it. It's got his accent in there, but I'm not going to attempt it.
All right, please.
Anyway.
Look, I went and looked for a couple, and there's the classic Aussie ones like Drongo, which of course is just a racehorse from the 1920s. I think that's a fairly well known one.
Another racehorse.
Never won a race. Your bludger. Yeah. But of course, that's actually quite a nasty one. That goes right back to the 1800s, an old term for a pimp who would use a bludgeon to protect his income.
Holy moly.
Yeah, there we go. So I decided to settle in on couldn't organise a piss up in a brewery, which I thought was a very, very Australian phrase. And I'm wildly wrong. First used in The Observer in only 1980 to refer to the disorganisation of the Ford car factory workers in Merseyside in England.
Wow. There you go. I mean, yeah, that's it's not easy at all.
If it wasn't going to be Australian, it was going to be British.
We took it as quickly as we could, as far as I could tell. So I'm very proud of us for
and
that.
And, of course, Australia has later spawned some not suitable for breakfast radio variants on the same thing.
We certainly have. It's another one that's got a few variations, isn't it? Now, if people still feel like they have some vague self-esteem left after that and we need more insults directed to their ears, how are they going to hear this episode?
Well, it's out on Friday morning, and they can search The Expressionists in their podcast player or find us at expressionists.audio.
And, of course, Google Home. I'm still fascinated by
that.
Oh, yes. It's fantastic. Play Expressionist podcast. So good. Helen, Olivia, thank you very much.
Thank you, Nick.
Of course, all those details are always up on 2SER.com.